On Monday, we read from your emails. Our program on the USDA project to rethink the food pyramid reminded Sherry Johnson of Collegedale, Tennessee, of the food geometry her children grew up with. Many years ago, Rodale Prest published a food bullseye with perfect foods in the center and high-fat, sugar, etc. foods on the periphery. Would this work? My children grew up seeing this in our refrigerator, and I think it stuck. One of them became a registered dietitian. Barbara Sullivan in Waco, Texas, wrote to share a personal triumph. I found the perfect birthday card for my niece, who's a doctoral candidate studying nutrition. The cover of the card, she wrote, depicted the food pyramid, and the inside text relayed the good news that two new secret chambers had been discovered. They contained the cake and ice cream groups. And Sam Chase wrote that he doesn't need the food pyramid to eat smart. I found over 50 years of eating that one rule works well for me. If it tastes good and comes in a plastic bag I have to open, I should avoid it. During our program on the legacies of ancient Greece, we asked you for examples of how the Greeks still matter in your life. First, from Brian Donovan of Bemidji, Minnesota, what floats to the very top is the Greek passion for justice and the powerful linkage that they saw between justice and equality, epitomized by the principle of isonomia, the rallying cry of the 6th century Democrats, and translated atop the very Greek-looking entrance to the Supreme Court, equal justice under law. These enduring principles seem to me very much at stake. And from Eric Verkirk of Charlottesville, Virginia, the inspiration Greek and especially Athenian culture gives me comes from the participation required by the democratic system. Rather than simply laying out the privileges of citizens, they laid out their responsibilities and their duty to take an active role in political life. I think the root of the word idiot comes from someone who does not take part in political life. It's a lesson I think America would do well to learn. And finally, regarding our conversation with Arlo Guthrie about the use of his father's song, This Land, in a political parody. We received an email from Teresa Black, a folk singer and songwriter from Oklahoma. I recalled that Woody Guthrie's This Land was set to the tune of an old gospel song. I emailed the Ozark Cultural Resource Center, which has experts on old music, and this is the response Teresa received from expert Tricia Hearn in Mountain View, Arkansas. This Land was written to the tune of Little Darling Pal of Mine, which Guthrie got from the Carter family. They borrowed the tune from the gospel song called When the World's on Fire. We found a second source in a 2002 Morning Edition interview with Mark Zwanitzer, co-author of a Carter family biography. Here, he lists some of the family's classics and lesser-known works.
Keep on the Sunny Side, Will the Circle Be Unbroken. Some that are not quite so well-known, but I think are fabulous. When the World's on Fire is an old gospel song, really from the African-American church, that Blind Willie Davis had done as Rock of Ages. And Woody Guthrie would take that melody and use it as his sort of anthem to inclusion, This Land is Your Land.
Oh, loving mother, when the world's on fire, don't you want God's bosom to be your pillow? I'd be over in the rocks of ages. Rocks of ages will for me.
If you have any words of caution, counsel, or congratulations for us, the best way to send them is by email. The address is totn@npr.org. Please be sure to include your name and the place you're writing from, and if it matters, give us a guide on how to pronounce either.
Wheat fields waving.
In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.
Boys coming chanting, and the fog was lifting. This land was made